Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Now here's a dynamic duo for the ages. Escape artist Harry Houdini and Sherlock Holmes author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. On Fox's new adventure, Houdini and Doyle, they pair to solve supernatural crimes for any age. The matchup starts May 2nd, and co-creator and executive producer David Titcher joins me next. Also ahead, a round of Prince, more 2016 class of Peabody, and the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Hello, everyone, and happy Earth Day 2016, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want, and get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you with us on this Earth Day. 78 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. It's been an incredible week of warmth here in the New York metro area. Delighted to have you with us for the program All About Television. Great guests coming your way from LA in the hour ahead, and we invite you, as always, to be in the thick of the conversation. How do you do that? You raise your voice, and you call this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. We've got a chat room going also at blogtalkradio.com. That's SimonApple04 by name, and guest 892 is already in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Just click on the Facebook icon somewhere on the Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. And David Titcher will be live with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. Look for more tribute programming on Prince, the music megastar who died yesterday at age 57. ABC will devote tonight's 2020 episode to a Prince retrospective, and many cable channels from MTV to AXS-TV will offer specials throughout the weekend, and so will the people here at Blog Talk Radio. Round two of the Peabody Award class of 2016 came forward this morning. Netflix has 3 of the 11 winners in its corner: Master of None, Jessica Jones from Marvel, and the original movie Beasts of No Nation. 2 broadcast winners in the bunch: Blackish on ABC, Wolf Hall on PBS. Deutschland 83 on Sundance Television, Mr. Robot on USA Network, HBO's The Leftovers, Transparent from Amazon, Lifetime's Unreal, and Katie Morad from CBBS, BBC's worldwide distributed children's network, which is available in some markets here in the United States on cable and satellite, round out the group. Finalists not in this winner's circle include The Book of Negroes, Fargo, and Pressure Off the Boat. One more set of Peabody winners will be named next week, and all of them will get their honors May 21st here in New York in an evening event at Cipriani's Wall Street that will be covered by Pivot in a 90-minute special to run in June. That's news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the co-creator and executive producer of Houdini and Doyle, coming to Fox Monday, May 2nd at 9 p.m. Eastern, David Titcher. David, great to have you aboard.
It's nice to be here, Simon.
This is a very unusual show in so many ways. Let's start with how you came to put this thing together and why these two very iconic real-life human beings.
Well, I first came up with the idea somewhere between 1986 and 1989. I was reading a book on the paranormal and happened to mention that Harry Houdini and Arthur Conan Doyle were friends, both obsessed with the paranormal, and I instantly thought it would be a great movie, actually. And what attracted me to it was the irony of both the characters, that you had Doyle, who had created the most rational character, Sherlock Holmes, who was a believer in all things paranormal. And then on the other hand, you had Harry Houdini, who was a magician, who you thought would be open to that, who was actually the world's biggest skeptic. So I was always trying to do that as a movie. And the problem was I had so many ideas for the movie that it, you know, every few years I would take it out and I'd try to figure out which idea to do. I'd have like 7 ideas, you know, plot lines for the movie, but you can only really do one in a movie. So finally, you know, hey, do it as a television series, and then you can tell all the stories. And then it only took a decade until it came on the air. So that's the long history of Houdini and Doyle.
Well, how did the long history become a breakthrough? What was like the turning point in getting this program on Fox?
Once the idea to get it as a TV show, production companies started coming on board, and then it was when David Shore, who did House for many years, and he's one of those people on television that, you know, has such a great reputation that really sort of helped bring it along. And then he brought in his, I guess, protege, David Hosselton, who became our showrunner. So it was when they all came on board, it really started going in terms of actually getting this thing done.
So here we have the David and David show, and it's also a very unusual co-production because it's Canada, it's the United States, each with a production company involved, and then you have David Short's production company, which is U.S.-based, and that all comes together through Fox. What's it been like to put a show together with so many parties involved?
Yeah, we couldn't think of any show ever in the history of television that had so many entities, three networks. We actually had three studios and then also David Shore's company. And when the writer's room came together, we all thought this was going to be a horrible nightmare. You know, everybody just hates having one network, you know, and to have three networks giving their notes and everything just seemed like a horror story. But actually, it turned out to be relatively good because there were so many networks, no one network wanted to be the one that was just giving the horrible notes. So they all sort of fell in line. They said, what we were told is if there were two networks, they'd kind of go at each other, but three networks actually kind of worked out.
By the way, how big a debunker of things paranormal was Harry? As you said, that's like pretty hard to believe. You would think that somebody in the business of magic and somebody in the business of defying logic with all the escapes this man did over the course of his career would be like the easiest person to believe in the world of the paranormal.
I think because he knew how to fake it. When Houdini first started out when he was very young, he actually made a living as a fake psychic. And so he knew all the tricks of the trade. So he wasn't just a debunker. He was the leading debunker in the world. I mean, he actually went to Congress and tried to get a law passed against mediums. And the problem was that most of the senators and congressmen had mediums. So I think he had difficulty passing it. But that the friendship between Houdini and Doyle is quite unusual because that they were on such opposite sides. But for years they kind of they got along. They just accepted the fact that they disagreed. But then it actually got quite ugly between them. And, you know, for years, and they became like huge public enemies. But that's not the part of the show that we're going to be covering. We're going to be covering the part when they're getting along.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to that, there's another twist to your program, and that is that they're dealing with crimes out of Scotland Yard, crimes of the supernatural, but they're also dealing with the first female head, I guess, of London's Metro Police Force named Adelaide Strand. Is that a real character?
Wait, Adelaide? Yeah. Adelaide is based on a real woman, Adelaide Stratton, who was the first female cop at Scotland Yard. I mean, we have it a little earlier. Our show takes place in 1901, and she was like a decade or so later. But it was really difficult to find information on this woman. We had to go. It was like the only time in this was a lot of research to go into this, and it was the only time we actually had to go into, like, the microfiche, you know, newspapers from the time to get anything on her. But there really wasn't that much, so we basically just made it all up.
Well, speaking with David Titcher, he is the co-creator executive producer of Houdini and Doyle, Fox's latest original series, and it premieres Monday, May 2nd, right after a new episode of Gotham at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local Fox station. David joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on this Earth Day 2016 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum on the other coast known as New York. Happy to have you aboard wherever you listen to us across the country, around the globe on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for David, ring it in at 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, all now in the room. The big story of this year, and this week in television, I should say, was the premiere of AMC's critically acclaimed The Night Manager. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have the Oscar-winning director behind that miniseries, Suzanne Beer. She's not only the director, she's also one of the key executive producers. Suzanne Beer from The Night Manager, my lead guest Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Be Televised. televised. Also on the program, we'll showcase The Jam. It's a new comedy about life at a radio station in Chicago. We've got the co-stars, creators and executive producers, Jim Cosra and Chris Petlak. This is the first production from the new original productions unit at the New York Television Festival. It is already running on iTunes, and next week it will start running on smart TV sets and smart devices. Jim Cosra and Chris Petlak from The Jam and Susan Deere, the Oscar-winning director of The Night Manager, they're all there this Monday. Should be a dynamite show, 3, 10 Eastern, in Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. So what kind of crimes are Houdini and Doyle up against on your series, David?
Well, Scotland Yard really doesn't want them doing work for them, so they take the cases that Scotland Yard is a little bit embarrassed about, like cases where supposedly a ghost did the murder. Or we deal with a lot of different topics in the supernatural. There's a case about reincarnation. We deal with a Spring Hill Jack, who is actually a monster that supposedly terrorized London for 100 years. We deal with the story about the Green Children of Woolpit, which was it's a story in England about, you know, it was a small town, and all of a sudden two green children come there and say that they're from a different planet. We deal with devil cults and vampires. We bring Bram Stoker, who is actually related to Doyle, into the story about vampires and haunted houses and all the sort of things that were going on at that point. Because really in 1901, it was sort of the first time you could ever really kind of talk openly about these sorts of things without being burned at the stake. So people were nuts about the paranormal back then. Even as much as it's a big topic now, in 1901, it was huge.
Did you and your fellow writers have any access to actual case files at Scotland Yard of these kind of crimes?
No. These were not actual crimes. We sort of found case. If we wanted to do Spring Hill Jack, we would find a way to do it, a way that Scotland Yard would have to deal with it. But we weren't actually dealing with the cases at the time. I mean, the one big case at the time was Jack the Ripper, or it was actually like 10 years earlier. We don't really deal with that, but in the Spring Hill Jack story, we refer to it. So we're in the context of the times in terms of real cases, but we're finding a way to tell paranormal stories within the context of Scotland Yard cases.
The one about Green Children, I'm wondering, was that sort of a tribute in a way to that famous film, The Boy with Green Hair, with Dean Stockwell playing the kid whose hair turns green inexplicably?
I think that movie must have been based on the real case, which was actually the real case was like in the 1100s. It was long ago, and we just put it in 1901. But nobody mentioned it specifically. But now that you say that, we should have, but we didn't.
Were there any other sources that you used as material for the plot? When I think of things like the Paranormal One series, that comes to mind is One Step Beyond, the John Newman directed series from the late 50s, early 60s, that dealt with true cases of the paranormal. Or what he would call the world outside that of our five senses.
Do we deal with real? I'm sorry, I missed that. Real.
Yeah, I wonder if a show like One Step Beyond, which dealt with on a regular basis cases of the paranormal.
We didn't deal with that show. Even though I started watching that show a bit before when I was working on the show, but not specific to that show. The one show we most referenced was, of course, The X-Files, but mostly in terms of not wanting to rip stories that they did. Like, always you're trying to avoid stuff like that. You know, if
oh,
X-Files...
Go ahead, David. I mentioned One Step Beyond in part because the last season of the show, Newland and his production crew actually did a number of episodes in England with English actors based on British cases that they were able to come up with.
We did not reference that show, no. Mm-hmm. And that's more of a British show. It wasn't really as well known here.
Mm-hmm. No. when you cast it, or when you and Noah David chose the cast, what were you looking for in terms of people playing Houdini and people playing Doyle? And how did you come up with the choices of Michael Weston, who we all know from House, a little bit from 1600, playing Harry Houdini, and Stephen Mangan from Episodes, the series wrapping up next year on Showtime with Matt LeBlanc, who plays Doyle?
Well, Mangan was relatively easy to cast once we – he was one of our first choices, if not our first choice. And, you know, once he wanted to do it, it was just sort of a home run. The Houdini role was very difficult to cast and sort of went down to the last day. And, you know, it just took forever because it was a difficult role to cast because you had to have somebody who could be funny, who could do all the drama, who could do, you know, who could be likable. Because the part Houdini is written is a bit of an asshole. So you need an actor that could play it likable. And you had to have a guy that was believable as Harry Houdini. So it was extremely difficult. We went through hundreds of people. And finally, Michael, who actually the Davids, David Hasselton and David Shore, knew him from House. So they had a way into him. But he was just, you know, he worked out really well in a role that we never thought we could get the perfect person for.
And then in the role of Stratton, who is sort of like the mediator, if you will, between these two iconic real people, you have a woman named Rebecca Lenard, who some folks know from an FX series called Man Seeking Woman that is going to be back, by the way, next year for a third season. How did she get into the role of Stratton?
Again, you know, she just shone above the rest of them. There were, you know, hundreds of women that wanted that role. The way the international financial structure of the show went was we could cast one American. We could actually have only one American working on the entire show, and so we decided it was going to be Houdini. And then it seemed like it was going to be a Canadian woman would be best for Adelaide, even though she would have to then, you know, spend a lot of time figuring out the English accent. And we just loved Rebecca. I mean, I compare her to young Audrey Hepburn. I think she's just really great in the role. And with the Adelaide role, it was you know, a challenge to write because we always had to find the third opinion. I mean, you had these two very strong men. You had Houdini is the strong skeptic and Doyle who's the strong believer, just going at each other. So in every episode, we had to figure out, well, we wanted Adelaide to be strong as well. So what's the third opinion here? So she always had, you know, she was sort of also the voice of the police, which was important. Mm-hmm. But always, you know, what's her point of view for every story? So, and it turned out we really loved writing for all three actors as it came in. You know, when you're writing a show, you write a lot of it before. But once we started getting scenes in and seeing how they performed, we were able to get, you know, a better way to write for the specific actors.
Incidentally, when you showcase Weston as Houdini, does he get a chance to perform any magic or recreate one of those Houdini escapes at some point during the series?
In the pilot, he does the famous Chinese water torture trick, but we actually didn't do as much of that as we would like. Well, for one, because you're in the middle of these, you know, very tense, you know, crime cases, and you don't want to take time out for, oh, Harry has to go and perform. So we thought originally that we were going to do kind of a magic thing in every episode, and we had a magic consultant in England who was teaching Michael how to do a lot of card tricks and stuff, but it didn't work out as much as we wanted. But we tried to do little sleight of hand things that he would do in every episode, but usually it would be in the context of the crime itself. How he would find the criminal. He'd find a way to trick them into something by a sleight of hand movement.
Mm-hmm. Houdini and Doyle, that's Fox's newest series, and it premieres Monday, May 2nd on your local Fox station, right after a new episode of Gotham. That's 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We've got one of the co-creators and executive producers of Houdini and Doyle, David Tinker. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Happy New Year's as well on this Friday afternoon. Thanks for wrapping up your Earth Day week with us. It is Earth Day today, so get out there and support the environment any way you can. Here in New York, by the way, it is absolutely gorgeous. We have had an amazing string of weather all week long. Temperatures most in the 70s. We're at 78 at the top of the hour. Probably will hit 80 before the day is done. Simon Applebaum, we're with you live from New York right here on Blog Talk Radio. You have a question or comment for David? Ring it in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Guest 930 now in the room, along with Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia. If you have Apple TV 2.0, or Chromecast, you now have the opportunity to see top Broadway shows thanks to a new service called Broadway HD. 1 week from today on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have the Broadway producers who put this service together. Bonnie Conley and Stuart Lane, they're both with us live at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. David, we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, good to hear you. You're on the line with David Tinker. Go ahead.
Hi, David.
Hi.
I wanted to ask, part of your screenwriting bio, it says that you were part of the most successful screenwriting class in the history of the film business, I'm assuming, at UCLA.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering about that, as well as I'm also wondering, like, having to do with this series, how Houdini and Arthur Conan Doyle, you said towards the end of their careers, were kind of at each other. And I'm kind of wondering whether in your successful screenwriting class, whether there were maybe some of you guys were at each other, like super competitive and maybe even like frenemies or enemies. And I'm wondering whether the same thing happened with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Houdini to kind of help their career as well, because everybody likes drama.
I hate to disappoint you, but we actually at UCLA got along really well. I mean, I'm still friends with a lot of the people that I went to film school with. And when I was there, we formed a group called the UCLA Writers Block, where we had a party the first Friday of every month at one of our professors' houses, and we'd have like hundreds of people there. And we did that for 20 years, and it was just because we all got along really well. But a lot of great screenwriters came out of that class, and I'm very proud. At one point, I wanted to do a show with just all the writers would be people that I went to film school with. It's a really great class of talented people. But what was interesting was that basically half the people in the class got really successful, and half never really did much with their career. And when you were at film school, you really couldn't tell the talent difference. It wasn't like the really talented people got to be more successful. I mean, there was something in terms of maybe perseverance and something like that, but it's just sort of a magic thing that happens, the right place at the right time. But we weren't as competitive, certainly not as Houdini and Doyle, where they were really, the friendship turning into a feud was when Doyle's wife was a medium. His second wife was a medium. And she, you know, Houdini was very much into his mother who had died, and he was trying to contact her. And Doyle said, I'm going to have my wife do a seance, and she's going to bring back your mother. So they do this seance. Houdini's not a believer anyways, but Doyle's wife, you know, does this whole thing where she starts talking about, she's coming back as Houdini's mom. She's talking about Jesus, and she's speaking in English. And Doyle's and Houdini's mother was Jewish, didn't believe in Jesus, and didn't speak English. So Houdini called Doyle's wife publicly. He called her a fraud, and that just made things very ugly between them. It got very ugly between the Houdini and the spiritualists. Doyle was the leading spiritualist in the world at that time, and Houdini was trying to get laws passed against them. So the spiritualists were conspiring and publicly calling for the death of Houdini. And you know, Houdini did die because somebody punched him. And the guy that punched him didn't just punch him in the stomach to test him. He attacked him and punched him three times. And the guy was a spiritual – he was a football player, and he was also a spiritualist. And Houdini had been attacked like a week before by another spiritualist. I mean, I don't think they're trying to kill him, because I don't think you try to kill somebody by punching them. But they were definitely angry at him.
Wow, it's incredible. You couldn't make that stuff up as a screenwriter. So
I know. We hope our show will eventually reach the point where we can get into that stuff. But at least, you know, for the first few seasons, we're really dealing with them being very close and working on these crimes, which they didn't actually do. They didn't actually solve crimes for Scotland Yard, but we're making that part up.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your insight, and thanks for telling me about the writer's block over there. That's really inspirational, and I'm definitely going to try and find out more on that, and best wishes on the success of your show.
Okay, thank you very much.
Absolutely, and thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome, Reagan. Thanks for uncovering a lot of fun info over the last few minutes about David, about Houdini and Joe. That was dynamite. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too,
thank
Simon.
Rick, we have our good friend joining us from Philadelphia. And David, before we let you go, how much fun have you had, along with the other Davids, in putting together stories about real people? I mean, for example, David Shore, of course, has found a lot of lasting fame, really, in creating a character from scratch, like how beautifully portrayed by, Hugh Laurie. What's it been like to sort of take these two, in their each in their field, iconic people, real people, and making them the stuff of adventure heroes?
Well, I mean, we feel honored to be able to deal with them. And yet, there's such a long history that you can deal with them. And you have these whole communities that we hope will be interested in our show. I mean, these are two, 100 years later, they're as iconic figures as you can get from that time period. So we're, that they still have these followings. Doyle has all the Sherlock Holmes people, and Houdini has all the magic people, who have sort of taken the mantle in terms of being a debunker and skeptic. Well, you see, from Houdini, there's now this tradition that like Penn and Teller are now skeptics, and kind of the leading skeptics of our time may be magicians, because they know how to fake stuff. But I will tell you, I'm the one writer that's sort of the representative of the paranormal on the show. I mean, all the other writers are sort of skeptical, but I'm the one sort of believer in the crowd. So I take the mantle of Doyle proudly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mantle of Harry Houdini, played by Michael Weston, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, played by Stephen Mangan, well, that mantle rises to the forefront on Monday, May 2nd, with the premiere of Houdini and Doyle. It comes out at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Fox. To check your local listings of the Fox station in your area. And for those of you up in Canada, you can also catch that series simultaneously on the Global Television Network. Again, check your local listings for the global affiliate in your area. New episode of Dawson precedes the premiere of Houdini and Doyle on that Monday, May 2nd. For more details about the program online, you can go to www.fox.com. That's www.fox.com. And if you don't want to wait, you can see the series trailer at youtube.com as well. David Tichter, co-creator, executive producer of Houdini and Doyle, thank you again for joining us. All the best to you and your fellow Davids in making the show happen, and hopefully this is the beginning of a wonderful run.
Thank you very much, Simon. It was a pleasure being here.
Same here. All the greatest. Take care and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too.
David Tichter from Houdini and Doyle joining us live from Los Angeles. And now some words from the fine people at Audible.com. If you like Dick Van Dyke, and boy, that man is amazing, from the Dick Van Dyke Show to Mary Poppins to Bye Bye Birdie to Chee Chee Bang Bang, his other TV hit, Diagnosis Murder, and others, you might not know that he has a wonderful book out called Keep Moving, and it is a huge bestseller that a lot of places are out of stock. Well, you can hear Dick Van Dyke thanks to the fine folks at Audible.com, because his wonderful autobiography, Keep Moving, is one of the newer titles available to you through that terrific service. And you don't have to wait to get it. You can get it free of charge. if you become a subscriber for a 30-day trial at audible.com. You know, Audible is a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. And Keep Moving is one of over 180,000 titles of all makes, sizes, and genres that you can choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including wherever you are hearing this on right now on Blog Talk Radio. And all you have to do to get it happening is sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book, Keep Moving, or something else you like, and 1 month trial of the service, which is only at less than $15 a month if you decide to go permanently. By the way, if you're a fan of the wonderful author David Balducci, you can get his latest book, The Last Mile, as another Audible top title if you like. And the customer service, as you know, is top of the line because Audible is an Amazon company. And Amazon wrote the book on great customer service for audiobooks and other merchandise. So go to audibletrial.com/televised, sign up at that URL, get your pre-audio book, 1 month trial, and be on your way to some wonderful sound entertainment, information, and yes, inspiration at audible.com. When we come back, the answer to this week's classic trivia question and some more thoughts about Prince and MTV. We'll get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the Kelly Mano Show, twice a week. Kelly does her thing, celebrity gossip, and a whole lot more. Check out Kelly, her guests, and herself twice a week, right here, various times, on Blog Talk Radio. Remember also, you can get the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. And check out Blog Talk Radio podcast, including this program, anytime, where you can watch and hear us on Apple TV 2.0 using the iTunes podcast app. Welcome back to the Marvin Televised on this Earth Day 2016. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Glad you are with us. You can still take part of the program. If you have a question or comment, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We welcome guest 948 into the room. We're with our good friends from Philadelphia also there as well. And now it's time for the answer to this week's classic trivia question. The question we posed at the start of the week was this. What Beatles song introduced every single Beatles cartoon from the 1960s on ABC? Well, we didn't get an answer, but we did have a couple of responses that were close. One person, Adam Schomer, gave us this answer on Facebook, which was, "And Your Bird Can Sing." Well, that was the introducer for the third season episodes. The first two seasons of that series on ABC in the mid-60s was Can't Buy Me Love, but that was not the answer. And Henry Falcone, also from New York, gave us another answer. Again, close call but no cigar, A Hard Day's Night. That was the closing theme of every episode, but not of every cartoon. So I'm going to introduce the answer in two ways. First of all, I'm going to sort of imitate how the opener of every Beatles cartoon went. See if you can get the answer. Do 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 do. Now that's the way the Beatles cartoon opened every time. Now here's what the song would be if you heard it. And it goes like this. Do 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 do. I should have known better with a girl like you. That's the answer. I Should Have Known Better was the Beatles song that introduced every Beatles cartoon on the 1960 ABC series that ran three seasons. And incidentally, Kingfisher Syndicate, which produced the series on ABC, liked the way they did I Should Have Known Better. They used it as their theme song for all of their television programming for some time after. I Should Have Known Better was the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Thanks to Adam and Henry for their answers. Came close, no cigar. So nobody got the answer, and that means that nobody gets the book Nobody Dies in Hollywood by John Wilder, the acclaimed TV writer behind The Streets of San Francisco and Centennial. Good news is, we'll offer this novel from Balcony 7 Publishers again next Monday when we give you another classic trivia question of the week. So tune into our show on Monday. Listen for the question. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. First person with the correct answer wins that book. Remember to include your name and your mailing address when you email. You can also use Twitter for the answer. Just send it to this hashtag, TWBT. That's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. That Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch, the folks that invite you to create your own social soundtrack. And you can learn how anytime by going to this website, www.hopscotch.com. That's www.hopscotch.com. Again, we'll post the question on Monday. If you know the answer, email, Twitter, first correct answer wins the prize. If you missed Monday's episode, don't worry. I'll post the question first thing Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and also my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. But remember, you got to be in to win. So give it a go. You never know. And, of course, all the best. And now before we leave you on this Earth Day 2016, a comment. Of course, we are still contemplating the loss of one of the great iconic figures of recent music history, Prince, who passed away yesterday in an elevator in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the age of 57. An autopsy into the cause of his death is still going on. Hopefully, there will be details before the end of the day. As I mentioned on our news note, there will be a lot of specials and tributes still to come. 2020 is devoting their episode tonight to a Prince retrospective. There are other specials that will be on everything from BET to Oprah Winfrey Network to MTV, and AXS TV is doing not one but two specials involving Prince as well. I had a chance to hear a lot about Prince at last night here in New York, across the street from Madison Square Garden, where MTV was presenting its fall programming preview. Two things. It was very interesting to see how MTV, which had this ceremony planned for quite a while, turned on a dime to highlight Prince, and in more than one way. Everybody walking in got wristbands in purple, of course, that they could wear or just present any way they wanted to honor Prince. The DJ, before the presentation came on, did a whole set of Prince music. Doug Herzog, the head of Viacom's music entertainment group that monitors MTV, came out before the presentation to offer his thoughts about Prince, because he had a chance to meet him and to see him in performance a number of times in the course of his career. And a music person from MTV News also spoke from the heart about Prince, saying in part that he was not just a musical icon, he was, and I quote, our icon, our North Star. It was wonderful to see so many ways that, on the spur of the moment, MTV paid tribute. And it also said something, too, about where MTV is at. You know, there's been a lot of talk over the years, particularly the last decade or so, that MTV has not been what it could have been or what it has been when it started back in 1981, over 35 years ago. That in recent years, MTV, despite successes like Catfish and Ridiculousness and Teen Mom and 18 and Pregnant, and the MTV Movie Awards, the Video Music Awards, and so forth, that MTV has, because it downplayed music for many years, lost its edge, its mojo, its hipness, its cutting graphics, its spine, if you will. Well, last night was the first time that I personally saw that mojo, that edge, that irreverency rebirthed, if you will, reborn. Now, the proof is in the pudding, and MTV has a lot of new series that they're coming out with, including its first live music performance series in decades, known as Wonderland, the comeback of MTV Unplugged, the Music Video Awards coming back to New York for the first time in years at Madison Square Garden this August. So I'm sure there's a lot of skepticism about, well, Simon, are you correct that MTV is reborn, that we're going to get back to what it used to be, what it started out as? I don't know if it will start out as. There's only one birth period of MTV. The 80s were an incredible time with the growth of music videos to where they are. Music videos are certainly not the cutting-edge music video form that it was back in the 80s. But I get a sense that because of what I heard and saw there, that hopefully will be played out over the next few months, the rest of this year and next year, that maybe, just maybe, there was a chance that what I saw last night was MTV reborn, that the mojo may be back. The spine that made MTV such an incredible force in music in its first decade and a half or so, that may be back. The fact that MTV News is coming back and coming back in a major way, that may be a signal. And some of the new shows that are not only going to happen, but are being developed by the likes of Pitbull and John Legend, music talents, that may also be a sign of things. So keep your fingers crossed, folks. The glory days of MTV might be coming back, but again, the proof is in the pudding. We will see. Monday on Smartly Televised, Suzanne Beer, the Oscar-winning director of The Night Manager, the show of the week that premiered on AMC to rave reviews and will be seen all over the world, over 180 countries. She's with us on Monday as my lead guest. Suzanne Beer, the Oscar-winning director, executive producer of The Night Manager, kicks things off on Monday's episode. Also on the program, Jim Cosgrove and Chris Petlak, the co-creators, co-stars, and executive producers of the new comedy based in Chicago about life at a radio station, The Jam. It's currently running on iTunes, but on April 30th, it expands to smart TVs and smart TV sets. What makes it also important, it's the first original series from the new radio production unit of the New York Television Festival, first of its kind of the new cadre of TV festivals around the country, like New York, Austin, Series Fest in Denver, et cetera, et cetera. Jim Conner, Chris Petrak from The Jam, joins us on Monday. And then coming up on Friday, we will have Bonnie Conley and Stuart Lane, Broadway show producers, now the co-founders of the new service Broadway HD that you can find 24/7 at Apple TV and Chromecast with other places to go in the works. That's all coming out next week. 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, this Monday and Friday, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, if you missed any part of today's program or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, and we've had an incredible April so far with over 9,000 replays, just go to our homepage anytime you like, and you'll find our episodes and a whole lot more. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Also, you'll find us 24/7 on iTunes. Check out that podcast version of our series. You can download your smartphone or tablet this weekend. Take us on the go anytime you like. And remember, if you have Apple TV 2.0, you can watch and hear our program and other Blog Talk Radio shows at the new iTunes podcast app. Check it out. It is dynamite. Remember, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our guest today? What do you think about where TV is at and where it's going, whether it's new shows and networks, smart TV sets, smart TV devices, maybe virtual reality or holographic television? We'd like to hear from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're from. That's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. You can also get involved in our regular feature, A Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that you think doesn't get enough attention? Well, if you let us know, bring it to our attention, and we use your suggestion on the air, of course, you get the credit. But you got to sound off to make it happen, so do so at simonapple04@yahoo.com. You also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. And incidentally, before we go off the air, I want to thank all of you on Twitter for getting us past 500 followers for the first time this week. We really appreciate it. So thank you for following what I say, and I'm happy that you think that what I say matters, and what you say matters as well. So thank you for the wonderful response on Twitter. Keep it coming and tell your friends. Remember, we love hearing from you because guess what? As we always say, what you say matters. So keep making it happen, and thank you for your consideration, participation, and involvement. It is really appreciated. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy Domestico and Candace Williams. Andy Toth, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator and chief executive of this very enterprise, is Mr. Alan Levy. Remember to stay tuned to Blog Talk Radio for more, celebrating the life and legacy of Prince, with specials and all sorts of things on our regular programming throughout the rest of today and throughout the weekend. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of sports entertainment information and inspiration. Remember, if you want a free 30-day trial and a free audio book, just sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com, an Amazon company. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Earth Day 2016. To all of our Jewish listeners, have a great start of Passover and a wonderful weekend as well. We will catch you back here Monday with Suzanne Beal of The Night Manager and the duo from The Jams from the New York Television Festival. It's all at 3 p.m. Eastern, near Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you're doing this weekend, remember, be safe and be great. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.